Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, dear listeners, and welcome back to season 4 of Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast with me, Caroline Foran. I now have a very special guest on the show, and you might think it's going to be some glamorous celebrity. She's glamorous, all right, but she's not a celebrity. She's my beautiful mother, Aideen. You might recognize her from all the times that I mortify her on my Instagram. She's here with me now, and I had so many requests to have her on the series to hear from her perspective how it was having me go through what I went through with anxiety, and how a parent might be better able to support their child through anxiety, or their teenager, or their 20-something-year-old, or their 30-something-year-old. It doesn't matter what age you are when you're a parent to a child, you always have that relationship. And especially, I think it's important to talk about how people can broach the subject of anxiety with parents who maybe aren't as receptive to the subject, or who maybe are a bit uncomfortable with it. And so I asked my mum all these questions, and she's an absolute hero, and I really wouldn't be here without her, and I can't thank her enough. I'll never be able to thank her enough. There's not enough boxes of roses in the world to say thank you enough times to my beautiful mommy. But I'm so happy that she was able to be here, not just for all the nappy changes that she's done in the week that she's been here with my new baby, but to be able to have this conversation with me and be so honest and open. So I hope you enjoy, and hope you get something out of it, and I hope that if you are having a hard time trying to explain your anxiety to your parents, that you can share this episode with them and they might be able to get something from it. Thank you so much, and enjoy. So I asked on Instagram if anyone had any guests that they'd like to have hear from on Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast, and one of the requests that I got again and again and again was to hear from my mammy, and that's you.
Okay,
so thank you for joining me.
Oh, pleasure.
I also should say thank you for being here all week and helping me with my new baby, and changing a lot of dirty nappies, and handling very well an explosive poo nami. I want to talk to you about my story of anxiety, but from your perspective as the parent, and what that was like for you. And I get a lot of messages from people saying, I fully understand my anxiety myself. I know that it's anxiety. I've identified it. I've labeled it. I know what I have to do. But one of the biggest roadblocks is my parents or my family don't get it, and they don't understand, and they just think I should just snap out of it. And it's really upsetting me because I can't talk to them about it, and they think it's just loaded bollocks or whatever. What can I do? And I never know what to say to these people, because I was always so fortunate to have parents who were willing to be educated around mental health. And you know, you didn't start off knowing, and neither did I. None of us started off having any awareness of it. Mm-hmm. But that you were, you know, present and supportive, and you never once just said, oh, don't be ridiculous or don't be silly. And I just think such a driver of anxiety in and of itself is when people are met with that response, especially from the people they care about most. Mm-hmm. So I suppose the first thing I want to ask you is, what would you say to someone who is where I was and trying to figure out how to articulate it to their parents? Mm-hmm. What do you think, there's a way that you can bring it up that would make a parent not just think they just need to get over it and get on with it?
Yeah, I hate that phrase, actually, get over it. It's a massive thing to say to somebody. What are you asking them to get over anyway? You know, it's not like turning the page of a book. It's their sense of self. It's the way they are dealing with the world. And, you know, they're easy words to trip off your tongue, but they're horrible to be said to be addressed in that way. And it comes from a perspective of somebody who is, first of all, has no understanding of the situation, but secondly, is not showing any willingness to find out about it.
Do you think it's a fear on the part of the parent as well, that they don't want to tap into their own mental health?
I don't know if I say it so broadly as that, but it can possibly strike a nerve for some people. In there may have been issues within their own family circle of people who had, there's a phrase that used to be used years ago, saying, oh, she suffers with her nerves. Or
dicky tummy.
Well, before you even get onto the physical manifestations of it, but there was, I can remember being told, oh, such and such, she suffers with her nerves. Mm-hmm. And or we don't see her very often because she has the old nerves thing going. And, you know, it's this big cloaked in mystery, as though a person almost chose to have this situation. And I think one of the most powerful things about learning what I've learned with you is that when somebody's able to say to you, look, there are physical things happening in your system that are
giving rise to it
or feeding into it or maybe triggering these sort of one-way streets of emotional turmoil, I suppose. When you're told that there's actual physical things going on in your body that are contributing to that, I think that's probably, for me, the most powerful piece of information that we gleaned over the years.
Yeah.
And that certainly wasn't available when you were suffering as a child with a dodgy tummy, which we, of course, all put down to maybe overexcitement or too much sugar.
Too much Coca-Cola.
Too much Coca-Cola. You know, hands up. We know so much more now. But I wish I had known more when you were small. Because I think if this situation arises for a child, get in there as early as possible and help them to rationalise it. And
normalise it.
Normalise it and maybe deal with it in small little ways.
Yeah, I remember like one of my biggest fears when I like was trying to articulate what I was feeling was that it would be met with a response of like, oh Jesus, what's wrong with her? As if, you know, rather than say, oh, that's okay, you know, that's normal, or maybe that makes sense. If someone reacts to you with such fear and worry on your face looking at me kind of unravel, then that made me more fearful because I said, oh, hang on, if my mom thinks there's something wrong here, there's obviously something very wrong. But that your reaction to me or anyone's reaction, the same as Barry's or anyone's reaction to me who had never experienced anxiety, was coming from a place of not having any understanding or awareness of it.
No, and not only not having the understanding and awareness of it, but nobody in the professional field reaching out and saying, you know, this isn't just a little dodgy tummy. Let's have a look at what's going on behind. Because you were not a nervous child. In fact, you were quite vocal, which was great. I thought that was great in a young girl. But at the same time, you complained quite often of, my tummy's not well, or, you know, and if I knew then what I know now, I would be asking those questions. And I would certainly say to any mother of young children, keep your eye on things like that. If a child is presenting to you with, not feeling great, mom, or, you know, do I have to go to school, or what, you know, whatever it might be, don't just say, oh, don't be silly.
Especially if there's a pattern of it, and it's not just a once off.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, obviously you're not going to ring any alarm bells if this only happens on an irregular basis. But if there seems to be a pattern of things coming through, I think take stock of it and maybe just think to yourself, you know what? It looks like, you know, maybe a little bit of a dicky tummy, but this could be hiding something else that's going on inside that the child may not even be aware of. But it could be the beginnings of anxiety.
Yeah. And it could have you understanding that maybe there was a little worry or a little, I mean, insecurity there. Or yeah. I think for me, when I look back at my childhood, now, obviously, it's like, I obviously have like, you know, perspective now, and like maybe I'm looking back and putting a narrative on my childhood that maybe wasn't there at the time, but I feel like I can remember feeling very much craving you and craving, you know, because you, and this is not, and I always say this is not like a, this is not a slight on you, but you worked very hard and you traveled a lot for work, and Dad did a lot, you know, you both worked very hard, and we had minders and we had grandparents, and I remember vividly always feeling sick in Nana and Granddad's house, especially when Nana died and it was just Granddad, and I was so frightened of people saying things like, oh, your Nana's with you. And I remember how it only ever manifested for me was, I don't feel well in my tummy. And the minute you guys would close the door and leave and I was just left with Granddad, I was just like, I don't feel well, I don't feel well.
Yeah.
And I know and think now all I wanted was just to be with you. And yeah. I remember when you, I don't know what job you had, where I was probably a little bit older, maybe I was still in primary school, but a little bit more further on. And you had a half day every Wednesday. And you, on that day, were able to pick me up from school. And you'd pick me up and we'd go to the shop on the way home and we get the makings of lunch. And that, for me, was the highlight of my week. And I don't think I ever would have said I felt sick on that day.
Yes.
So I think now, looking back, that it wasn't anxiety over anything more than just, I just wanted to be with you more.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I also was, you know, had a very vivid imagination, and things like when people passed on, like, so we had all our grandparents die at the same, in the same kind of 9 month period. Oh, someone else would say, oh, it's nice that they're, you know, your nan is with you. And I was like, what? Like this,
yeah.
You know, and that's not your fault either. But
yeah,
in my kind of very, very vivid imagination took that to say, hang on a second, there's a ghost in the room. Because there was a phase where I just I had to sleep in Daniel's room for a long time when Granddad died.
It's a, sort of a note to self. If I was ever to go through motherhood again, it's pretty unlikely at this stage, but I would be probably a little more careful about saying these things to a small child, a young child, because, you know, the fertile imagination kicks in big time, and you don't always hear back. You don't get the feedback from the child, but little things can start to worry them.
Well, something that you wouldn't have been aware of that I'm aware of now, and it's the reason why someone asked me the other day, do you worry that you'll give your baby like all of your anxiety? And I don't, because I have so much awareness and understanding and empathy, and I will know, I'll very clearly recognize, I hope I'll be able to recognize any kind of little presentations of anxiety in him. But what, for me, what was a massive learning when I was trying to put the whole thing together was that when you're a child, your ability to store long-term memories and have quite visceral experiences and, you know, fearful experiences and store fear memories, that's something that your brain can do long before it can develop logic and reason. So for a grandparent to say, oh, don't be silly, there's no monsters under your bed, or not a grandparent, a parent to say there's no monster under your bed, or go on upstairs and do your teeth and wee-wees and don't be silly, a child can be very frightened of something that's in their imagination, but they haven't yet been able to say that's silly. So for me now, I think with what you now know, you would have gone back and said, actually come down to my level and say, okay, let's just imagine the little worries and fears from her perspective, because she can't rationalize it. And I would hope that I will have that awareness now myself. And then if you can get in at that level, you can maybe prevent those things from setting in.
Absolutely, yeah.
But again, that's not anything any parent would have known about, because we didn't have the words, didn't have the language.
I think there's a lot more awareness of listening to children now.
And taking them seriously, because it's real for them.
Yeah, no, totally. And I'm glad things have moved on to the point where people can get information fairly quickly.
And I don't think it's a case that we're more anxious now. Maybe we are because of things like social media. But I think that there would have been a lot more people, like in my generation growing up in like the 90s, I'm sure there would have been lots of kids with anxiety, and they just never would have had that word. But they would have had tummy issues, and maybe they would have had something else, some other physical manifestation. And I think in your day, there definitely was loads of anxiety, but the last thing you knew was that word, or to understand it. Like you say, someone was suffering from their nerves, or someone turned to the drink, or they said nothing and they just put their head down. Did you ever hear the story of Barry's, was it his... I think it was his granddad. I need to fact check this, but it was someone in Barry's family who was much older and ended up being very mentally unwell. And at the time, it was easier for the family, apparently, to have the narrative that that person had died. And everyone was told that he had died. And actually, he had gone to be checked into like a mental health facility, and there was more shame around that. It was easier to have people. So then I remember like Barry's mom then finding out that actually he didn't die, he was, this wow. is where, and like, that's just shows you, like, that's how drilled down yeah. the stigma was with anything. And that's yeah. not that long ago. Like, that's only two generations ago.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
like, we're not
we've
that
come
far.
A long way. We definitely have come a long way. And I mean, I'm really, really happy to be around in this day and age when people are, first of all, willing to come out and say, you know, I have had some issues, or I'm going through something, or I know somebody who is, or, you know, mm-hmm. it's out there now. And I'm so happy about that.
It's one thing to have your child, like a young child, be frightened or need cuddle, or, you know, be tearful and need to get, you know, under your elbow and have a little whinge, or need a bit of a hug and a comforting. But it's another thing to have your daughter, who's 24 going on 25, need the same thing. And that's what happened to me. I suppose for everyone who's listened to the series now will know that they'll know my story. They know that I had like tummy issues, and I never realized it was probably a lot to do with anxiety without mm-hmm. me ever realizing it. And then in 2014, shit really hit the fan, and I had a really, really horrible experience of anxiety, and none of us knew anything about it. And it was all of that unknown and all mm-hmm. of that fear that propelled it and self-perpetuated it. Mm-hmm. But what was it like for you to have your daughter at that age suddenly be so in such desperate need of you? Mm. And because, you know, you want, I guess, I assume you feel like when your child gets to that age, you've done your job, I suppose, and that they're a well-adjusted person, and for them to come kind of come back to you saying, I actually can't be, like, I had to sleep in the same bed as you for a while in my mid-20s because I was that bad.
Yeah.
What was that like for you?
It was a huge worry. And it was the kind of worry that you didn't want to put your worry onto the person who's going through it. So you're kind of holding back, trying to keep a lid on it in a sense, not in the kind of hushing it up, but just trying to pour a little bit of oil on the
because you don't want to frighten me more.
Precisely, yeah. But in at the back of that, then I was starting to try and check things out and see where were we going to go with this. And I discovered that going to a local family doctor in a situation like that is not necessarily going to give you the answers that you want. And it didn't in your case. And then we decided that we would start looking around ourselves. You and I both felt.
Well, I remember that I was incapable of doing anything at the time. Yeah. And you said, I remember we were in Dingle because you brought me down there because I couldn't be alone and Barry was gone away. And you sat down with a pen and paper and you wrote out things. We're gonna look at this direction first, and we're gonna look down this avenue, and we're gonna try this.
Yeah.
And I literally needed you to be the person to do that because I couldn't pick myself up off the floor.
You know, and it's very, very, it's so difficult. You're at that point of everything was closing in around you. And for me, the best thing to do is say, listen, okay, what can I do now? Going through the regular medical channels is not working. However well intentioned that might have been, but in your particular case, that didn't work. Now, sometimes people will have an amazing doctor who will see them as in a bigger situation than just reporting with kind of
one physical symptom.
Yes, exactly. Mm. But as I say, we had to start looking around, and
we had to take a holistic approach.
We did, and part of that came about by accident, because I was really at the end of my tether one day. I went into the pharmacy near where I was working, and you were in, as I would say, a right heap at the time. You were, you know, this fog had descended upon you, and you were wasting away. And your face was white. You had no energy. You were very tearful. You were really in a sad place. And very confused by it all, and you couldn't understand why was this happening.
No, because everything on paper looked good, and anyone else would have said, why can't you just be happy? Because
the whole
everything
snap out
got
of it again. Oh, I hate that phrase. But I went into my local the pharmacy near where I was working, and I had kind of started being chatty with the dispensing pharmacist there, and we would pass, you know, time of day, and then a conversation would start, and she would be telling me stuff, and when it was quiet, And then this particular day when I was really, really feeling like, God, what are we going to do? We just have to do something about this. And something that she said to me, I actually, tears started slipping down my face. And she just said, come on, come with me. And we went into this little side room, which they used for little confidential consultations with their patients or their customers. And I basically blubbed and I told her where we were at the time. And she told me that she had come through a situation similar to that herself in the recent past. And she told me that one of the first things that she found helpful was going to somebody who's called a functional medicine doctor. Mm-hmm. Now, I'd never heard the phrase before. And she explained that going to see this person gave her complete clarity on how her body was functioning and or misfunctioning, if that's the word. So she explained a little bit more about it. She said this particular area of medicine is not generally practiced in Ireland. It was very new and there were only one or two people in Ireland actually offering this service. So she gave me some contacts and went about finding out a little bit more. And we got an appointment with one of these people, one of the very, very few people.
And Dr. Fionnuala McHale.
Yes, who was practicing up in Suffolk Street at the time. Now, it took a while to get the appointment, needless to say. But it was like this great big secret that some people knew about, but that wasn't available through the normal channels. So we got the appointment for you. We read up a little bit about that particular style of medicine. The fact that it was you had to go to America to train in this, mm-hmm. and that it was not generally perceived as a readily available service in Ireland. Mm. So anyway, we got the appointment. We both went, and the first thing that she said to you
was... The first thing I did was cry.
Of course. The first thing that she said to you was that she was going to focus on the way your body worked, but that she wasn't going to become involved in your emotional health.
Really? I don't remember that.
And for a very good reason, which she explained, she said she was going to set you up for certain tests.
Yeah, she was going to look at my adrenal functions, my hormones.
Yeah, and the big word for me was hormones, right? And she said that there was, she would arrange for these tests and all these samples or whatever would go off to the UK to some very highly prestigious clinic for analysis, and that it would show us exactly what was happening to your body.
Mm-hmm. So more so show you how my body was functioning, because there was nothing wrong with me that you would... There was like same as like when I found out that I wasn't celiac, there was nothing that you could point your finger on and say, yeah, this is wrong, but it's how your body is performing or lack thereof.
Yeah. And what's firing properly in your body and what's misfiring, exactly. What's in the doldrums, mm-hmm. and what's overworking.
And it's also worth saying that like looking at your body in that way doesn't mean that there isn't something like going on. It's not something that's purely physically wrong. Your hormones can go physically awry because of what's going on in your life, in your lifestyle, or, you know, emotionally. They're one and the same. Like,
yeah.
Whereas she was coming at from the perspective, let's just look at what's happening in your body.
Exactly.
Let's get a clear picture of what's going on. Yeah.
Let's map out your entire system.
Yeah.
And then see where we are. And then we'll know which direction to go in.
And she identified through those tests that I was like off the charts with cortisol, which is the stress hormone.
Yeah. You were under... Your cortisol was, which you probably, your listeners will know, is the one that kind of gets you going in the morning,
yeah.
and fires you up for the day.
Yeah.
And that is supposed to ease off in the evening. And that's replaced by
melatonin. And that comes up, that rises up to settle you down.
To settle you down for sleep, get you prepared for sleep. Now, in your case, the opposites were happening there. The cortisol was off the charts. And the melatonin was flagging. And
well, it
was
wasn't being able to. Yeah.
It was overwhelmed by the cortisol. So you were flat out on high alert because of those two things.
Sleep deprived as well.
Sleep deprived, you know, all the knock-on effects of those. And your adrenal glands were not performing properly.
No, they were completely overworked.
Overworked. So your adrenaline was, again, up there in the Richter scale.
And I don't think I had very much serotonin or anything like that.
Yeah, you had none of the really calming stuff, but you had plenty of the highly charged stuff going on. Mm. And the great thing after all that was mapped out was she put you on a path of adjusting the levels of those things in your bodies mm-hmm. to calm everything down. Now, at that point, I had great hope for the future because I thought, at last, we have some clarity. We know if your body is overwhelmed with cortisol and adrenaline, you're going to be wired to the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a catastrophic view of everything.
I think at that point it would have sounded like a fairly simple road out of it by just saying, okay, well, let's just physically bring everything back to balance and then you should be okay. But for me being in it, I couldn't see the wood for the trees.
Absolutely not. And it took a while. It took quite a while.
A year, I think, really. And, you know, because she was talking about things like increasing, you know, these phytonutrients and broccoli and things, and I was just like, oh, fuck off, like, I don't, and no disrespect to her, but I was thinking a plate of broccoli isn't going to make me stop having panic attacks.
Yeah,
I'm not, because I wanted instant relief. I wanted to just feel better straight away.
Yeah.
But what I was missing then was the acceptance part of, okay, well, this makes sense, or it's okay to feel this way, because I really just felt like I've lost my mind.
Mm.
My family are terrified. They're looking at me like I've got two heads. They're afraid to leave me by myself. My new boyfriend, God love him, doesn't know what he's got himself into.
Yeah.
There was no like role models that I could have said, well, here's a normal person who looks like me and talks like me and is also has come through the other side.
Yeah.
I didn't have any of that.
Yeah.
So I was trying, you know, and whenever I also retreated from my friends completely. Like I didn't go on social media. I didn't see anyone. I couldn't physically go anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. But for me, there's nothing like having information
mm-hmm.
about something, because up to that we were swirling around clutching at straws. You had tried all kinds of alternative things. We'd gone down to the Midlands to some,
oh my god, remember that,
like
I remember ringing you. I was like in your bed back in, because I had moved out of our house, so I was back. I kept going back to my family home every day because Barry would go to work and I couldn't be by myself. And I was lying in your bed feeling awful, and I was Googling things frantically, and I found this website for this, you know, treatment. This is what I say all the time, is like that, you know, I'm sure they're helpful in some ways, but when you're in that much of a vulnerable position and you read that this will make your anxiety go away and you latch onto it, and I rang you, and it was really expensive and I wasn't working. I'd quit my job because I wasn't well enough to work, and I was begging you, please take me to see this person, they're going to cure my anxiety. And of course you didn't know any better, so you was like, okay, let's go.
Yeah.
And we went, and he, you know, did, well, I don't know, it was some kind of hypnotherapy with a bit of like vibration stuff.
Yeah.
And I was so of the belief that I'm going to walk out here and my anxiety, he's going to cure it and it's going to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever we did, it was some sort of relaxation thing. I came out of it feeling super, super relaxed. And I was like, it's gone. It's absolutely gone. And then we drove down to Dingle, where you now live, but you weren't at the time.
Yeah.
But Dad was down there.
Right.
And I remember just saying to you and Dad, it's actually gone. And because I was so clueless about it that I thought it was something that had just possessed me for a while and then was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember going to bed that night. And
this was before we did the functional medicine.
Yeah, it was.
So this is when we're swirling around in the dark, trying all these different therapies, just to clarify that for people.
Yeah. And I went to bed that night and I said, you were like, okay, so you're feeling okay? I said, yeah, it's fine. And then you closed the door and you took me in, and then you closed the door, and I just started to think, is it gone? Like, am I okay? And just slowly but surely a fucking tsunami erupted in me, and I was like, oh my God, it's not gone, it's not gone, it's not gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that realization of, okay, one treatment of one, you know, something vibrating off your temples isn't going to make it all go away.
No.
And that frightened me so much that I was like, it's actually not gone and I'm broken.
You were actually, as a result of that, you were
so much worse.
I'd say the intensity doubled for you.
Well, I remember then, because then after that, while I was still down in Dingle with you, I had to get Dad to sleep in that bedroom and I had to sleep with you.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't be by myself.
Yeah.
And I remember another time you had to come into me in the shower and I was sitting on the shower and you had to literally physically pull me out of the shower because I just was like, I've given up.
Yeah.
I've given up hope.
Yeah.
And I remember that at that moment, that's when we sat down with the pen and paper and said, no, we are going to figure this out.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for you having that get up and go, and that, you know, if it wasn't for you being that strength for me, I don't think I'd be where I am now, because mm-hmm. I needed someone to take ownership of it. And mm-hmm. that's why I'm so lucky and grateful that, like, so many people don't have that person mm-hmm. in their life that can say, I'm going to literally carry you through this now, because mm-hmm. you were trying to figure it out as you went along as well.
Yeah, and it's worth mentioning again that there was nothing there at the time. I really would want to assure people that now there are avenues of inquiry for you.
There's so much
if you're going through it. You know, other people like Caroline have come out and been very open about what they went through. But prior to that sort of clarity coming into her life, it was a pretty desperate place. And that whole why doesn't she get over it, or pick herself
up? Sure, what have you got to be anxious about? Yeah,
exactly. Or pull yourself together. Oh my God, I just cringe when I hear that now.
Mm-hmm.
But that trip to the person down in the Midlands, wherever it was a disaster, really.
It did more damage.
It did, because it absolutely sucked all the hope out of you. And then when we got to the point where we knew what was happening in your body and you started to work on repairing that, then we were able to look at, where do we move this now?
Yes, then you connected me with my acupuncturist, Hannah, who yeah. I was probably the first person I went to see who I just felt, even though she was only meant to give me acupuncture, she felt like a therapist, because she yeah. just said, I know what this is like, I've been there. And that to me was worth its weight in gold, was for someone who's functioning in life and thriving as far as I could see to say, I've been there and I've come through.
Yeah.
And that, I suppose, is what I hope to be for anyone now, is that all I wanted then was to hear from someone who lives to tell the tale.
Yeah.
And if I can be that person now for anyone, even though they don't necessarily know me personally, that can give them a little bit of hope that they'll come through it.
And also, you did say there at the point of going to sit for that therapy session that didn't work out, that you pinned all your hopes on it being a cure-all.
Yeah.
That you were literally going to go in as one person.
Come out as another.
And as most people know at this stage, anxiety is something that you learn to manage.
Yeah.
And we learned that slowly over a period of a year.
That was something I wouldn't have wanted to have been told at the time.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, no, get rid of it, cure it. I didn't want to be told, you learn to live with it, because I said, this is not a life. I'm not living. This is not a good quality of life. But I didn't realize that. I didn't have the awareness that anxiety is something we're all capable of feeling.
Everybody
Some of us just feel it more than others.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that it's a case of your stress response misfiring too much when you're under pressure, when your adrenal glands are overtired mm-hmm. due to different things, and when mm-hmm. your prefrontal cortex is put under pressure for different things. I didn't have, and like you said earlier, like, knowledge is power. Knowledge about all of that would have prevented me from plunging to the depths that I did plunge to.
Yeah.
I never ever would have gotten there had I had the understanding that I do now.
Yeah. And I mean, I have learned so much from this through your suffering, through the really dark phases of this. It was a massive learning area for me. And I think that, as I say, nowadays, nobody needs to go through it the way you did.
No, I don't think so. I think it can be avoided to that extent.
And I think, to have somebody that you go to see not just want to tick you off as having been dealt with, but actually travel with you as you're going through this thing.
Yeah.
And help you to make those little steps, I think that is hugely beneficial.
How did you feel all of those times when I kept apologizing to you for being a burden on you?
Oh God, that's a heartbreaker, isn't it? I mean, nobody wants to hear their child saying they're sorry for something, you know. Like, even if it's a little misdemeanor of some sort, it's terrible to be a parent and have your child come and say, oh, I'm so sorry.
But I really did feel like a burden, and
yeah.
I felt like a burden on everyone in my life. Yeah.
But I think your message to anybody now would be, park that thought. Don't feel you're a burden. Your mental health is something that you have to nurture and, you know, comfort and just be very honest about.
Mm.
I think that's a massive message that you give out to people.
Do you remember that evening when, again, I was staying over in your house? Because, so for context, I had just moved out I'd moved in with Barry, and then this all happened to me. And it's not because I moved out with Barry, it was just the timing was just awful, that it seemed like it was something to do with that. But I never had anything but good feelings about moving in with Barry, and obviously he's my husband now and the father of my baby. Yeah. But I kept going back. I just had to go back to the nest. I had to literally physically get under your wing. I felt like, and I always use this this terminology, but I think I was saying to you that I felt like I was like a bird who was always born with like a broken wing or something, or there's maybe just something a little bit wrong, from something went amiss, and I was always a little bit more delicate and fragile, and I just needed to be cared for a little bit more than most people,
and
I felt sorry for that.
But what may I ask is wrong with that? If you know, we're all different, and some of us find more comfort in that type of emotional attachment than maybe some others do, but it's not a sign of weakness.
Well, I really believed that it was. I really thought I was a very weak, I thought I was just always a weak person, and now I completely have turned that around, and I know that there's a difference between weakness and sensitivity.
Absolutely.
And I was so hard on myself.
Yes, you were.
Incredibly hard on myself. And I just remember, I don't think either of us will ever forget that night when you sat beside me on the bed, and I felt like I was a 7-year-old again, and I was 25, and there was tears falling out of my eyes, and you were trying to soothe me to sleep like the way I am doing now with my baby.
Yeah.
And you were rubbing my cheek, because that always comforted me when I was really young and still does, and you were singing the song, the Cyndi Lauper song, True Colours. Yeah. And for you to say those words, you know, I see your true colours shining through, and I couldn't see them myself at all. Yeah. And I want for you to say that to me. And I was like, can you really see that I'm still in here? I just, it was just so, I don't know, so emotional that this.
Well, that song, whenever I hear it, I actually, I well up every single time. I think it's.
How did you feel in that moment?
I thought they were the most appropriate and truthful words, because you were just in this fog of hopelessness at the time about yourself. You couldn't see a future for yourself. Now, I'm not saying at that stage that you felt it was all over for you, but you just were at that really dark, dark point. But anybody who knew you knew that you were made of stronger stuff, and it was just a matter of finding it.
Mm.
And I think you've proved over and over again that you have a little metal rod going through you somewhere deep inside that carried you through, and it will always be there. But it's a lovely privilege to have your child, no matter how old they are, in my view, come to look for support from you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
And what do you say then, just to go back to my first question, to someone who looks for that support and doesn't get it? Is there a way of broaching it, or do you have to get it from a parent? Can you get it elsewhere?
No, you don't have to. And I mean, not everybody is in the same family situation that you were in. I mean, there's all kinds of different family groupings, and I suppose it's from somebody that you consider a soulmate, or that is a potential soulmate.
Someone that you trust.
Trust, yeah. And somebody who won't judge you. Somebody who puts all that, leaves all of that outside and says, look, you know, I'm here for you. Even if I haven't got the answers, I'm a soundbar. Just tell me everything.
Something I was always concerned with was that you would feel like me going through that, or me, if I was saying to you that I feel broken or I feel weak, that you would feel like it was a failure on your part. Did you ever feel that?
No.
And what did you, when you weren't with me in those moments, and you know, maybe you were talking to your friends, or maybe you were talking to Dad about what I was going through, how did you make sense of it? How did you make sense of the way that I was and my personality?
When we didn't know what was causing all of this, as in the way you, first of all, your body, the way your body functions, and secondly, the way your emotions function and the way you deal with situations. Before we knew what that was all about, all I could do really was give you the hugs and say, listen, we'll find a way through. Much like I remember you telling me about Barry when you had moved in and things started to fall apart for you, and he just took you in his arms and he said, we'll get through this.
He said, we will figure this out.
Yeah, we will
figure this out. We'll get through this. Whereas, and that for me was, we weren't together that long.
Yeah.
But for me, that was, hold on a second. This is someone with strength that I don't even think he's aware of the strength that he has. If he can say, I'm going to be with you in this, when he could have just run for the hills.
Yeah. That was massive. And it was really lovely for us to hear that he had that sort of strength of character.
Yeah.
And we kind of christened him the rock at that stage, and he has remained so.
Yeah.
As I suppose, to answer your question, it when we didn't know very much about it, all we could do really was just be there for you. But when we did know more about it, it was a question of, okay, let's do this now. Let's follow this path and see where it brings us. But then you really took it all up yourself. You know, it wasn't, I was only helpful in that sense to a certain point, because you gained the strength then to kind of, as the phrase goes now, you took ownership of it and you started seeking out answers yourself. And then you were on a roll then after
that. How did you feel about your child needing or deciding to go on medication? You know, I guess there was a massive, and there still is a massive stigma around that, because we would sort of, you know, what we know about medication, especially the word Prozac, which was what I went on, is from movies and, you know, crazy people on the TV. Did you feel like that was, did you have to convince yourself that that was the right thing to do? Or how did you feel about that?
Because at the time you started taking medication, you really needed it to kind of assist you to get back on an even keel so that you could start dealing with your daily life.
And benefit from things like yoga or going for a walk.
Coupled it. You didn't rely on medication.
No, you can't.
It wasn't a prop for you. It was a means to an end. And look, bully for anybody who wants to investigate that, whatever helps. I mean, that, and it takes courage to start looking for these things and to look for, not remedies exactly, but things that will help you on your way.
How did my experience of anxiety and my struggles with mental health make you think about your mental health and the people who you grew up with, and maybe your friends and your relatives who maybe, did you think back and say, actually, maybe that was what that was?
Yes, it did. That sort of information and knowledge enlightens you as to other people in your life as well, and what they may have been going through before we knew anything about anything, you know? I mean, there would be stories about relations in the past and people who kind of, as they used to say, they went into a home and they pretty much stayed there because It was like a backwater. Nobody knew how to deal with these things. Mm. And a lot of those people maybe didn't need to be there at
no.
all. Or they might have needed a temporary respite, but they could have been out there fully functioning people in the whole world, but they were just cast aside because nobody knew what to do.
I know.
And it was a shameful thing.
Yeah,
exactly. It was considered, you know, mental health wasn't something that, I don't think the phrase even existed.
And looking back, do you feel that, I mean, I don't think you've ever struggled with anxiety to the extent that I did, but did it make you think back to your own life and times when you probably maybe went through anxious phases, but certainly tried to push it under the rug because of the social stigma?
Yeah, I didn't encounter very extreme situations, but like everybody who breathes the air, there are times in your life when there are stresses and maybe little hills to climb. But I suppose I just muddled through. And it didn't get to a point where I needed to ask for any help. There were things I just got on with, I suppose. But having watched you come through all of this and learn to deal with it, it's made me more conscious of mental health in general,
mm-hmm.
and how we must show it really, really high respect.
And I was always curious, you know, because your generation and you certainly would have come from an era of don't air your dirty laundry in public and keep it to yourself and always put your best foot forward. And I go completely against the grain of that with especially how I share on social media. And for me, people think that I'm sharing to comfort other people, and that's part of it, but also part of me sharing the reality of whatever I'm going through is me looking for a way to normalize things, and for me looking for it to be acceptable and okay in society to feel the way I feel or the way anyone feels. And it's all very normal stuff, and I know that now.
Yeah.
But have you struggled, and are you now at the point where you're on board with the fact that I do air my dirty laundry in public and that's how I cope?
Yeah, absolutely on board with it. I admire you for your honesty, and I've heard people say, not just in in comments back to you, but people have said it to me, that your honesty just shines through. And it's part of you being a brave little mouse.
You always called me a brave little mouse. And actually, I think I want to get a little mouse tattooed on me. So whenever I feel a wave of vulnerability, that I remember that's
absolutely
what I am.
Yeah.
Did you ever worry that I wouldn't get through it?
I just refused to go there in my own head. I said, no, this we're going to get a handle on this.
Mm-hmm.
And because I knew you had the strength in you to do it, because yeah, I could see the way you were curious yourself. It wasn't, you didn't have to be dragged anywhere.
I didn't have apathy. Like, I wanted, yeah. And I think that's, I don't really know very much about depression, and I have, people always kind of conflate the two, anxiety and depression, and I don't like to speak about depression too much because I think they're very different.
Mm.
But for me, one of the characteristics of depression might be that apathy and that not wanting to even try, whereas I was so desperate not to feel that way, and I was so desperate to get back to a point of living my life, that for me that was probably always a burning ember in there somewhere.
Yeah. And even though I would profess to know absolutely nothing about the field of mental health, but just observing you, I felt in my gut that you were going to conquer this.
And do you remember a time when you thought that, okay, I can relax a bit now, she is coming back to herself?
Well, I think, you know, sort of the holding your breath that things will work out started to kind of lessen over time. And I feel that you've made a really strong point to people about managing the situation rather than, as we referred to earlier on, finding a cure.
Mm-hmm.
That it's something that you face, you know, nose to nose from time to time, because life throws stuff at you. But I can see you have skills that you engage to get around those situations and to move on. And I never ever thought that you were going to lose that battle.
Mm.
Because I suppose every parent knows that their child has certain strengths. And I just knew you have an innate curiosity, you have great zest for life, you're a great researcher, you read up on things, and
well, I'm a voracious need to solve a problem.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that they're very good skills to have in that situation, because you pursued things, you found things that suited you, you found things that you said, nah, that really isn't me. And you knew your own mind. But the great thing about it was you started asking the questions and you took it on yourself then.
Mm-hmm.
So I know I'm not as involved with you now as I was back in those days in the looking for answers to things. You do all of that yourself now.
But you're still the first person I call whenever I need a space to be, allow myself to be vulnerable.
Absolutely. And but you're not looking to me for answers.
No.
You're sharing.
Yeah.
It's difference.
And I suppose just to ask you about my most recent experience at the time of recording this, my baby's 5. I can't believe I'm even saying that. I have a baby. God. And he's,
congratulations.
And he's 5 weeks old. And I definitely was plunged back into a physical place where my hormones were completely all over the place again, which I had completely underestimated. I didn't expect, didn't anticipate with having a baby. Like I said to you earlier, I knew I was pregnant, but nobody told me I was going to have a baby. I thought once I got through labour, I'd be home and dry, and literally I wasn't. That I just had this blissful, beautiful love bubble, and I felt incredibly anxious. And I have another episode that I will do on postnatal anxiety. But for you then, for me to be completely freaking out and panicking about this postnatal position I found myself in, were you worried about me now, or because you've seen me come through this before, you know it's just a matter of settling things down?
No, not a bit worried about you, because every first time mother, whether they can attach a label to it or identify it, goes through the same fire and brimstone that you went through. And I just, like everybody, you know, not everybody, but most people, it's starting to settle for you now.
Mm.
And the hormone surge was all around, you know, rearing, at least growing a baby inside you, and then develop, you know, letting everything come on, and then having the birth and all of that. So it's all to do with that particular thing. So again, there's a reason for it.
Mm.
And everything is settling down now, and you're getting more confident by the day. So no, I would not have been worried about that at all.
Well, I think, as always, like, you can see it when I can't see it.
Yeah.
And it's so hard for anyone in the thick of anxiety to believe that there'll come a point when they won't feel it that way, or that they'll come through it.
I suppose the main thing is that you will get through it, and you have all the necessary ingredients to do it. You know, It's just a matter of being reminded that you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've proved now at this point that you can do it.
Yeah. And for any parents of particularly young girls in their teens or 20s, it seems to affect mostly that demographic. Is there anything that you would say is helpful for how a parent can approach a child who maybe isn't talking to their mum about it or their parent about it? You know, how would you have, if I didn't come to you, how would you have come to me about it? Or what would you say is a useful way to open up that conversation? Or what do you think is a useful thing to say when maybe you're not the mental health expert, but you want to be that support for someone?
I think it's just to be watchful quietly of if you kind of sense that your child is experiencing something that is in the same vein as what you went through. Be aware of it. Keep an eye out, even for, you know, as I said earlier, for the smaller children, things like the dicky tummy and that. Well, just don't just say, oh, it's just your tummy. Just remember, keep an eye on it. With teenagers, I suppose it's more to do with
look at the lifestyle.
And the emotional.
What's going on around. What's going on, yeah.
And be open.
And what about, you know, educating for parents? The parent might be the person who's feeling anxious, but how important is it for the parent to educate themselves on how anxiety comes about in the body, how, like, the hormones involved, how it happens. Do you think that's when, because for me anyway, when I understood that, it made a massive difference.
Yeah.
And now you have such a great understanding of, you know, you're talking about cortisol, you're talking about all these things that just are so normal to you now.
Yeah.
Do you think it's important that anyone who is trying to support someone with anxiety takes the time out to educate themselves?
Yeah, and as I said, there's so much out there now by way of information.
Mm-hmm.
So,
including your daughter's book.
Including, and beautiful podcasts, which are very illuminating. Yeah, just arm yourself with information and be ready. If somebody comes, if your child comes to talk to you, or if you open the avenue for, you know, mm-hmm. a teenager to say, you know, I'm not feeling great at the moment, or whatever it might be, and please don't be judgmental. That's all I can say.
Mm. And do you think it's important to share your vulnerability with your child so that they feel that, okay, you're not just the perfect person too? Or do you think it's important that your parents or that your children know that you're a tower of strength and will never waver? Because it's a difficult one.
It's a very difficult one, because you want to exude confidence that this can be managed, as mm-hmm. you can manage to take it to a point where the child is more comfortable, or mm-hmm. the teenager is more comfortable, even if it means, you know, talking to a third party about it. But just just be open, be non-judgmental, be a soundbar for the person to come and if they're having a bad day or whatever, and keep it small, and, you know, don't let it build up into something mm-hmm. that suddenly becomes massive.
So make it part of the conversation.
Yeah, and just to answer your point about show them your vulnerability, I think there's times if the young person is feeling really bad at that time, it may not be the time to share your own vulnerability. I think maybe that's something you can compare notes with further on, when they've maybe gained a few stages on the situation.
That's, I think I agree, because when you earlier said that it was such a huge worry for you, I felt this kick in my stomach that I'm so sorry that I did that to you.
God, no. I mean, it's a parent's job to worry.
Well, I know that now. I'm worried about a rash on the baby's face.
Which is clearing up, by the way. But no, it comes with the territory. There'll always be an underlying concern.
I still feel like I made it so much harder for you.
But look what I've learned.
Mm.
When my knowledge has grown hugely by what happened to you.
And how do you think it has impacted, like, our mother-daughter relationship? Do you think it's... Do you feel in a way glad that I turned to you for that, all of that?
Of course, yeah, I am glad. I'm glad that we found ways to deal with it, mm-hmm. as in to find out more about things, to rationalise it, make it not feel like you were a weirdo.
Yeah, because that's what I felt like.
Yeah. To just sort of be a little bit of a prop on the road.
Yeah, I mean, you physically held me up. You picked me up off the floor physically that day. You sang to me when I needed a lullaby, and you mopped my tears, and then you put in place the measures, like booking the appointments, to things that just would help me start my journey towards owning it and figuring it out. And I wouldn't have had the strength to do that. Even though I eventually took over the mantle, I wouldn't have had the strength in the first place to do that. So, like, you did, I don't think I'll ever be able to thank you enough for everything you did for me, and I don't know if I'd be here without, like, your love and your strength and everything you did for me. And
I think you made me be a better person.
Oh, mommy, did I?
You did.
If you could go back now to me when I first started to feel bad, knowing everything you know now, is there anything that you'd want to say to me, or even me as a kid when I was feeling unwell? Is there anything that you would like to do over?
At those times when you were crying and, you know, feeling very hopeless, it would have been great to say at that point, you're going to come through this.
But with certainty.
Know, yeah, I yeah. didn't know. I really didn't know what we were going to do. I knew we were going to do something,
mm-hmm.
and we weren't going to just let it fester. But it would have been maybe a nice thing to be able to say to you at the time, you know, I know a bit more about this than I used to know, and I'm telling you right now, you're going to find your way through.
And is that something that you now, having been through the experience with me, could say to the listeners who are in, if they're in that dark place without knowing them, that just knowing the transient nature of things, that if they are willing to open themselves up, open their minds and educate themselves and have the conversations, do you think that you could confidently tell a listener that they also will come through, come out the other side?
I, you know, if it's in the general area of anxiety, you know, I think, I honestly do think it's very achievable to find a way through. And it's not going to be a straight road, because as you found, you had to try lots of different things.
Yeah, you kind of take one step forward and two steps back. And
it's like, you know, people's idea of, for example, keeping fit. It might be running for you. It could be tennis for somebody else. It could be a hill walk for somebody else. Like it's diverse, and everybody, what worked for you may not necessarily work for somebody else.
Exactly.
But it's to know that you can try things out. Mm-hmm. And not call yourself a failure if they just don't happen to click with you.
Mm-hmm.
But be brave enough to say, I deserve better than this.
Mm-hmm.
I want to have a good life, and this is not going to hold me back.
Are you proud of me?
Well, absolutely, absolutely, I am.
Thank you so much, Mammy. I really appreciate that you did this with me. I know you didn't want it, but I plied you with a Merlot.
It's very nice. But I've only had a few sips, dear listeners.
And now you're going to cook me some dinner now that you're up here.
I'm here.
Love you, Mammy.
Love you too.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.